mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today in our ongoing series of crime prevention conversations, we're talking trick-or-treat and Halloween safety, because the scary parts of the season should be just for fun. Also this morning, an update on Red Cross disaster relief efforts from Florida to the Carolinas after the twin catastrophes of Hurricanes Helene and Milton, and fighting the effects of disaster fatigue. And the annual Medicare enrollment period opened this week. We have some simple advice on approaching a complex decision. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, October 16, 2024. The good news in the forecast, by the way, the extended forecast, looks like dry weather and a warming trend is coming. You look ahead to Tuesday of next week, which, of course, is the Findlay Halloween Parade. And right now, says a high in the mid-70s and a low in the mid-50s. And no rain in the forecast or anything like that. So as of right now, it's looking pretty good for the Findlay Halloween Parade. So that is the good news in the weather. Want to make sure that we at least share that with you here. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, the big rivalry football game of Northwest Ohio, UTBG, is coming up next Saturday. It's not this weekend. It is next weekend. But already there is a controversy brewing. Have you heard about this? The Bowling Green State University marching band will not be performing at the Glass Bowl when the team plays the Rockets. BGSU President Rodney Rogers says the University of Toledo has informed BG that the Falcons marching band would not be given time to perform during halftime. BG was not given a reason for the decision, and the president of Bowling Green says the move, of course, breaks decades of tradition and goodwill for the rivalry game, where the hosting university has welcomed the opposing team's band to perform at halftime. Will not happen at the Glass Bowl this year. Mr. Rogers says that BGSU will not reciprocate when his school hosts the game next year. In other words, the UT marching band will always be welcome on the Falcons' home field. So, petty? I don't know. I mean, it sounds a little petty, but no performance. It's already the first shot has been fired in the battle of I-75 between the Falcons and the Rockets. Stay tuned. Let's see. By the way, speaking of football, did you hear about this? NFL news. Tom Brady has been approved as a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. As I understand it, he has taken a 5% stake, ownership stake in the team. He first bid for a 10% stake in the team in May of last year. The approval process was stalled due to some owners questioning the price offered to the 7-time Super Bowl champion. So, NFL owners did vote, I guess, yesterday to approve his 5% ownership stake during a meeting yesterday. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about this is that Tom Brady, now this kind of throws a bit of a monkey wrench into his current post-playing career. By the way, this means that his playing career is officially over. He can't be an owner of a team and a player. So, as he is now a minority owner in the Raiders, that means his playing career is officially over. If anyone was hoping that he might come out of retirement to take to the field again, ain't going to happen. Although I would suppose that he could probably sell his stake in the Raiders in order to sign a playing contract. I don't know how the rules work on that, but I would imagine he could if he wanted to, but I don't think there's any chance, and this seems to end any possibility of any speculation that he might return to the game as a player. But what is interesting about this, in his second career as a broadcaster, of course, he's part of the number one broadcast team for the Fox television network now. And because he is an owner of a franchise, he will now face restrictions in his job with Fox Sports. Apparently, owners are not allowed in other teams, in certain areas of the other team's facility, which, of course, they usually do to attend broadcast production meetings and all of that. So there are restrictions on where he will be able to go in other teams' stadiums. So I don't know how that's all going to work, but I'm sure that they have a plan. I'm sure that they have a plan, and Fox will work around that. The NFL, I'm sure, is quite happy to have Tom Brady as the owner of a franchise. So they'll figure it all out, but now officially, Tom Brady is an NFL owner, or part owner. Kind of interesting. What else is going on in the first things you need to know? The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is a new study published in the journal Nature Human Behavior. And it's research out of China, which shows that the human nose may be even more powerful than previously thought. Researchers found that the nose can identify odors within a fraction of a second. That is a level of sensitivity similar to the way our brains perceive color, which I never really thought about this, but apparently, you know, when you see something, it takes your brain a fraction of a second to identify the color of the object that you are looking at. And now they say the nose can identify odors in a similar amount of time, which goes against previous assumptions that smell is a slower sense in humans. But I don't know. I mean, anyone who's ever sat on the couch with my uncle after a big dinner, when he lets one go, you know that the nose immediately recognizes odors. There are certain odors that you recognize immediately. You know what I mean? But now we have scientific proof of that, I guess. let's see. a couple of other items here. Again, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Who controls the purse strings in your relationship between you and your spouse? Who handles all of the money issues, the finances? According to a recent study out of the University of Essex in Great Britain, men still have more bargaining power in their households than do women. Men financially are typically the head of the household. In the United States, and that's not just the U.S., it's globally, in the United States, 61% of men control the purse strings. For comparison, in Australia, it's 60%. But in Germany, it's 69%. So they break it down by country. The U.S., 61%. However, men also tend to underperform in financial decisions compared to their female counterparts. So when it comes to making investments or, you know, that sort of thing, men actually underperform, even though they're the ones that typically control the purse strings. They say the imbalance between women and men in a relationship and the way they control money, the imbalance could contribute to women feeling financially insecure, and they suggest, the research suggests, more progress can be made toward financial equity within relationships. So, just thought that was kind of interesting, and maybe, speaking of money and making financial decisions, we're coming up on the Thanksgiving holiday. It'll be weeks before the actual forecasts are out for how much your Thanksgiving dinner will cost. I think it's the American Farm Bureau Federation each year puts out an index of how much the Thanksgiving feast will cost if you are hosting a meal for your family. They do this every year. It'll be a while yet before we get it, but don't be surprised if the number is quite a bit higher this year than it was last, because farmers and ag economists and, well, home cooks are already preparing for the feast ahead of the annual pre-Turkey Day report from the Farm Bureau Federation. Also, Wells Fargo, their Agri-Food Institute, puts out a report each year. And ahead of that, Dr. Michael Swanson, the chief agricultural economist at Wells Fargo, shared some early pricing insights this week with Good Morning America on ABC television to talk about what to expect when you are planning your menu. All right, so you know, maybe this is very early for you, but if you are starting to think about Thanksgiving and how you will afford it, turkeys are expected to cost 16% less than last year. How about that? Turkeys, 16% less. And maybe you do a turkey for sure this year instead of a ham because those prices are up 5.2%. So that's more than a 20% price difference, price swing between turkey and ham. And that's always the big debate. Turkey or ham for Thanksgiving? Looks like turkey is going to win out this year. Let's see. Thanksgiving, it says here, Thanksgiving food can draw mixed reviews for which dish reigns supreme on the dinner table, but most seem to agree that the meal is really all about the sides, which repeatedly shows up in the top search items online. This year, some of those staple ingredients could prove more pricey. According to Dr. Swanson, the price of sweet potatoes is up 4%. Russet potatoes are at an all-time high, up 14%. And although some may steer their shopping cart to the canned goods aisle for Thanksgiving dishes, this may be the year to consider buying fresh, because canned green beans are up by nearly 9%, and canned pumpkin prices jumped 30% compared to last year. So maybe going fresh is the way to go with those prices. Dr. Swanson tells GMA that labor and transportation are among the key factors driving up prices on these popular Thanksgiving foods. Those are the two big things that just don't get any cheaper anytime soon, he says. So anyway, just again, you starting your early planning on what you're going to be serving up for your big Turkey Day dinner, your Turkey Day feast. This is, now you know what to expect price-wise. Not a big surprise that many prices have gone up, sometimes significantly, but turkey prices coming down. That is certainly good news. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly sunny today with a high in the mid-50s. Mostly clear tonight, low in the mid-30s. Findlay-based supermarket chain Fresh Encounter, which operates the Great Scott Community Markets, among many other stores, has been acquired by food solutions company Spartan Nash out of Michigan. The CEO of Spartan Nash says, quote, Fresh Encounter has been a successful family-owned and operated business for decades, and we are proud to continue this legacy, end quote. He adds that Spartan Nash will continue employment for Fresh Encounter's 2,500 team members. Get more on the acquisition of Fresh Encounter by Spartan Nash in this story on our website. Millions of dollars will be coming to Ohio to replace lead water lines and satisfy an EPA mandate.
There are 745,000 lead water service lines throughout the state of Ohio. That's almost 10% of the country's total. The Biden administration has allocated $56.2 million to the state to find and replace these lead lines before 2035. While health is the major concern, many believe the federal allocation won't be enough to solve the lead water problem.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. The city of Findlay is letting residents know that Carnahan Avenue will be closed from Balsley Avenue to McConnell Street today for sewer repairs. Motorists are advised to avoid that area. You can see a list of other road construction projects that are ongoing in Findlay in this story on our website. A man who was a community leader in Findlay for many years has passed away. George Martin Whitson has died at the age of 93. George was a U.S. Army veteran and was working at Ohio Oil Company when he transferred to the company's headquarters in Findlay in 1963. By that time, the company had changed its corporate name to Marathon Oil Company. George left Marathon in 1965 and founded the real estate and investment firm Whitson Properties. His obituary by Kirkpatrick Benke Funeral Home reads that George quickly grew to love Findlay and was one of its most enthusiastic cheerleaders. Learn more about George and his legacy in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, the latest in our crime prevention conversations series with Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White in the studio. We're talking trick-or-treat and Halloween safety. It is that time of year, and as we were mentioning a little bit earlier, you know, we call this the scary season, but really the scares should all be just in good fun. We don't want any real scares.
Absolutely. That's our goal, is to keep everyone safe, yeah. Right? We want to make sure that Halloween and trick-or-treat is a fun time for everyone and keeping everyone safe.
So, first and foremost, we've got the Halloween parade coming up next week, and I know we've talked about this before, and the first item of Halloween safety is when you bring the kids down for the Halloween parade, keep them back off the street, on the curb, out of the way of all of the parade exhibitors.
Correct. You know, we talk about parade floats, but there's also a lot of heavy equipment. We have trucks and trailers and everything else that's coming to this parade.
And it's at night. So,
correct. Yeah. Especially if we have kids dressed up in dark clothing, which when we talk about safety, we talk about visibility, right?
Right.
These kids might not be able to be seen. So we really need to keep a distance back away. That's really what those barrels are for, as a good reminder to stay back. That way we do have enough room for not just the vehicles, but also the parade goers, people passing out that candy.
So that actually kind of leads us to, we talk about trick-or-treat safety and the ways that we can keep our kids safe while they're out, you know, running around. And this is another one of those times, kind of like back to school, where we say, you know, the kids aren't thinking safety. They've got other things on their mind. This is kind of the same thing. We, as drivers and as parents, we've got to take the lead in keeping them safe in many respects.
Absolutely. There's a lot of parallels between back to school and talking about safety, pedestrian safety, and trick-or-treat. Kiddos are four times more likely to be struck by a vehicle during trick-or-treat, simply because exactly what you said, not really paying attention, eager to get that candy, and kind of darting out into traffic.
And so obviously, if you're going to be driving, especially in some of those communities and some of the suburbs that don't have sidewalks, in my community, we don't have sidewalks. So kids are actually, in many cases, walking on the side of the street. So you really have to be careful.
Yeah. And from the driver perspective, we need to slow down, right? Pay attention, stay off your phones, stay away from the distractions, pay attention to what you're doing, slow down. That's also why we always put police cruisers on Main Street, because that's a heavily populated area with kiddos, and we want to slow cars down, just as, again, kind of that reminder. And when we talk about the kiddos and the pedestrians themselves, don't dart out in traffic. Make sure you're crossing at marked crosswalks. Or at least intersections, right, where cars and drivers are expecting to see you.
Right.
And a lot of times we're wearing, again, dark clothing. If we can make that more visible.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, safe costumes and the things that we can do to make it a little bit safer for the kids.
Sure. So starting out with a mask, right? If we wear a mask that hinders our visibility, it's going to make it tougher for us to see cars approaching.
Right.
So make sure the mask is appropriate. Make sure it fits. Make sure your kids can see out of it. Again, visibility. If it's a dark clothing, make sure a flashlight, something that illuminates, reflectors. It could even be glow sticks, right? Yeah. All that makes it more visible to traffic.
Anything that makes you more visible is a good thing.
That's a great thing.
And also, you know, making sure that the kids aren't tripping on their costumes. You know, you think of the traditional ghost costume where you put a sheet over your head, but it can, you know, be easy to trip over or something.
Yeah, you might have that long train behind you, but unfortunately,
or the Superman cape.
There you go, Superman. Long,
whatever.
But you might have someone behind you walking too close and catches your cape, and now you trip and fall over, yeah. right? Because, again, there's a lot of kids walking together. And that's another important thing. Make sure that we are going in groups
yeah.
and staying together.
Yeah. Again, this is the age-old advice. You want to go to the porch, but not in the house.
Correct. You know, it's funny. This is the time of year that I go into third grade, and I talk about stranger awareness, stranger danger, right, mm-hmm. is what we typically call it. And this always comes up. Well, what about trick or treat? We talk about not taking candy from a stranger, but what are we doing at trick or treat? Yeah. And we kind of talk about the differences and the importance of, again, staying together. Usually we're with family. We're not going into the house. And when we do get home, we are inspecting that candy to make sure that it is safe.
Yeah. How often is that? That's another thing that we've heard for generations about sure. the needles and razor blades in the candy and all of that. That's actually pretty rare.
It is. It's very rare that something like that happens. However, when it does, it's very newsworthy, right?
Sure.
We definitely hear about
yeah.
it. So, and it's also not zero either. So it's much like everything else. Even though it doesn't happen very often, we still have to take responsibility for ourselves mm-hmm. and make sure that we are being safe and yeah. inspecting it.
I remember when we were young, the advice was you don't take any homemade candy or homemade treats.
Correct, because you don't know where it came from,
yeah.
right? It's something that someone made. It's not packaged at a actual candy maker, commercial, right?
Yeah, commercially available candy.
And when we do find candy that's open, the old adage, when in doubt, throw it out, right? Mm-hmm. If it is open, just get rid of it. Kids yeah. have plenty of candy to go through.
Yeah.
I know when my kids get done with trick-or-treat, we're bags and bags of candy. And fortunately, I get to take all the Reese's peanut butter cups.
It's one of the perks.
Absolutely.
It's one of the perks.
That's a job as a parent, right?
The other thing to keep in mind, and this is maybe less talked about and maybe less recognized, the dangers that go along with some of the Halloween decorations. I mean, you know, again, we've got the jack-o'-lanterns with the candles inside. That can potentially pose a hazard if they're sitting on the front porch. And
sure. Decorations are always a potential hazard, especially if we're talking about something with real flames.
Yeah.
Probably the bigger issue would be more trip hazards, right? Things that we're going to fall over and mm-hmm. falling down steps, especially yeah. with little kids.
Yeah. Well, make sure that everything is well lighted. And again, you know, this, we don't want to ruin any of the Halloween fun, because this is part of the thing, all of the smoke and the spooky effects, and you know, maybe it's a little dark and so on, but in the final analysis, we want to make sure that we stay safe.
Yeah, we want to have fun and we want to stay safe. And another thing to do is when you're talking with your kids, make sure they know their name, their address, just mm-hmm. in case they would get separated.
Yeah.
There will be plenty of officers out and about, and we can get them home, but we need to know where to take them.
Outside of the trick-or-treat aspect, Halloween traditionally is a time for mischief, and you want to make sure that your kids understand there's a line between, you know, pranks and getting yourself into some real trouble.
Yeah, and that's true as well. And frequently we talk about toilet papering and, you know, marking up people's cars with soap and things like that. Yeah. Again, mischievous stuff, but you never know how that person's going to take it.
Right.
And it is something that can get us in trouble. So make sure, again, we're being safe. We're having fun, but not too much fun. And,
right.
Yeah. Taking care of each other.
All good advice, things to keep in mind as the Halloween season approaches. As we said, we want to make sure that we have fun and celebrate the season, but the scares should be just that. They should be for fun. They shouldn't be real dangers. Anything else that maybe parents want to keep in mind or think about as we get into the season?
Just again, paying attention. It really comes down to visibility, paying attention, where now on the part of drivers, where now it's on the part of parents, right? It's easy to lose our kids in a swarm of kids in costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So just make sure that we're paying attention.
Yeah. Very good advice. Again, our crime prevention conversation series with FPD crime prevention officer Brian White with us this morning. Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
You bet, Chris. Thanks
for
having me.
We'll see you at the parade here next week.
Yes, I will be there.
Well, of course, we have all seen the images and videos of the devastating effects of Hurricanes Helene and Milton. As the long road to recovery continues, and it will be a long road, we are joined by Trevor Riggin. He is president of Humanitarian Services at the American Red Cross. Trevor, what are you seeing on the ground in these affected areas in terms of what communities are needing right now? And talk about how the Red Cross is helping to meet those needs.
Well, I'm actually here in Tampa, Florida, where our relief operations headquarters for the entire state for Helene and Milton is located. But I spent the last couple weeks moving through communities in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and we know the devastation even reached up into Tennessee and West Virginia, even into Virginia.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is just very real impact to these communities, from the hurricane damage on the west coast of Florida, tornadoes on the east, heavy damage up into Georgia and South Carolina, and obviously the horrific damage up in western North Carolina. To meet that, the Red Cross has launched one of our largest relief operations in years. Right now, today, we have over 2,000 Red Cross volunteers and staff on the ground serving in community, delivering hot meals, distributing relief supplies. We have operated hundreds of shelters in the last few weeks. Tens of thousands of people have come to us for shelter, and they are still showing up today as the power outages continue, and they're just getting back to their homes in some communities and seeing that they've lost everything, and we're still there to support them in that. We are also ramping up for recovery, making sure we can do casework, health and mental health support for these families. But as I mentioned, the impact of these communities is so real and so traumatic that we are just trying to make sure we have all the resources we can to sustain these communities over the long haul.
I often wonder when it comes to those who drop everything and respond to these emergencies when there are large numbers of people in need, such as the Red Cross and the volunteers of the Red Cross especially. Do you ever have that sense of, you know, where do we begin, especially when you have two disasters, two hurricanes that strike so close to each other, not even close to cleaning up after one, and here comes the second? Is there ever that sense of where do we start?
Well, I definitely have seen that sense, but where it starts is local.
Yeah.
It always starts local in that community. And I'll give you a great example. I was in Hendersonville, North Carolina last week visiting one of our shelters. And I met this family who had moved there and bought their retirement home from San Diego. Hmm. And the night of the storm, night of Helene made landfall, they saw the water rise up to their chest in their home. And then, you know, eventually they had to evacuate their house, made it to higher ground, were rescued by the National Guard. And when I met them in our shelter, they were there standing beside our Red Cross volunteers going cot to cot, helping their neighbors, helping their family members. And that's how we see it always start. It's neighbors helping neighbors. It's Red Cross volunteers and staff who are already in the community, opening shelters, responding to that need. And then we see this movement for the next wave. So I also met a volunteer yesterday who signed up just last Wednesday in Seattle and is already running a shelter in eastern Florida.
Wow.
And so that second wave that comes from around the country to help people they've never met is what makes this whole machine work.
Disasters of all types inherently come with obstacles. I mean, many of these disasters have created their own obstacles to helping those who need help. What are some of the major challenges that Red Cross responders are facing with this recovery?
So two big challenges. One is with Helene and Milton, just the extreme geography we're facing, both in size and terrain. So on mm-hmm. the size, these two storms impacted everything from South Florida to northern or western North Carolina and even up into Tennessee. So hundreds of communities, thousands of miles. And that's why we have so many volunteers on the ground right now to make sure we can serve every community and meet every need. The other is the terrain. Some of these communities, like we saw in western North Carolina, this is extreme terrain even before the storm. So getting up into those communities, providing that assistance is a partnership. We have to work with every level of government and local community to make sure those supplies can get in. The last challenge has been repetitive impact. We have seen, even in Florida here in the last 2 years, 6 landfalling hurricanes in just the last 2 years on the west coast of Florida. Mm. We've seen in the Big Bend area, Debbie, Francine, Helene, and now Milton. I've talked to families who lost everything last year in Idalia, and now have gone through 4 different storms where they've either had more damage or they've had to evacuate, which means they had to spend their savings to stay in hotels or travel, or they've lost everything in the refrigerator. So all of that creates long-term trauma that's going to force us to have a much larger recovery effort than some other disasters.
And as we know, or as people should know, unlike the news reporters who go and cover the story for a couple of weeks and then move on to the next thing, the Red Cross is there for the long term. I mean, this is not something that is cleaned up in just a week. And these aren't even though these are the storms that are making the headlines now, as you were mentioning, there are other hurricanes. There are other hurricanes this season. There are wildfires, tornadoes. Do you ever see kind of a disaster fatigue set in?
Well, folks are definitely tired, not just in the response community where we are. In the Red Cross, we're responding to twice as many disasters today as 10 years ago, as you mentioned, wildfires, hurricanes, tornadoes, floods. The pace is nonstop. And mm-hmm. so making sure we have the resources to keep up with that pace is so important. But the communities themselves are tired. You know, I think 20 years ago, we would see communities that were impacted maybe once in a generation every few years. Now we're seeing communities impacted 2-3 times in the same year.
Yeah.
And so that repetitive impact has created a real sense of frustration for communities. On the positive side, we do still see that resilience. We still see these communities bouncing back. We see neighbor helping neighbor. We are seeing a good response from our volunteers to mobilize. We need more, but we're seeing good response from the community to make sure we have those resources. But it is a constant risk we face as we see this pace just accelerate year after year.
And that just reemphasizes the point that what you need in order to do the very important, very necessary work that you are doing are the resources, knowing that so many people have been affected, so many communities. And, you know, who knows what's next around the corner, because that thought is always in the back of your mind, I'm sure. How can folks help?
So the easiest way to help is to make a financial donation. And you can go to redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Make a gift today to make sure the Red Cross can be there today and tomorrow and that these communities get the help they need. You can also volunteer. We are in a constant need for volunteers. And you can sign up to deploy across the country and serve a disaster like Helene and Milton. Or you can volunteer at home and do a variety of services. 90% of our workforce is volunteer. And so there's a role for you if you want to volunteer with the Red Cross. You can go to redcross.org to sign up. You can also donate blood. When we have these extreme weather emergencies, they force us to cancel blood drives. They force families to cancel their appointments. And there is a constant need. So you can go to redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Make an appointment. That appointment could save a life.
That is such a great point, too. And just to really quickly underscore that this is the way these sorts of disasters impact everyone, not just in the affected areas, whether it's through canceled blood drives, whether it means volunteers and communities are mobilizing to these disaster zones and others need to pick up the slack for the community needs at home. Trevor Riggin is, again, president of Humanitarian Services at the American Red Cross. Trevor, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly our best wishes for everyone there. Stay safe, and thanks very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having us on.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin this morning in Harris County, Texas, where officials have placed Benjamin Walls under arrest. You see, Benjamin came upon some kids who were playing a pickup basketball game in a local park, and he wanted to play along. And when they declined to allow him to join in their basketball game, he did what any reasonable person would do. He pulled a gun on them. Wow. That is apparently Mr. Walls is accused of pointing his weapon and verbally threatening both the kids in the pickup basketball game and the parents and guardians who were there monitoring the, you know, monitoring the game. Overseeing the game. Pulled his gun and waved it around, threatening everybody involved. Nice guy. Deputies later found Mr. Walls at his residence nearby the park where all of this happened and took him into custody. He was booked on 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. I don't know why they wouldn't have wanted him to participate in their basketball game. He seems like such a stable individual. He'd probably be good on defense, I would think. He'd do well as a defender there. Nobody would drive the lane with him standing there, that's for sure. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news actually comes from the international file this morning. We have a lot of international stories. There is the group of folks in Mito, Japan, who are now in the Guinness Book of World Records. And get this, 507 participants were recognized as the largest number of people pointing in the air at the same time. That's their record. 507 people got together and pointed into the air at the same time, and that apparently is noteworthy. The stunt was part of the part of an event. It's got a name, but it's in Japanese. I can't possibly pronounce it, so I won't even try. It was part of an event honoring Japanese culture. They were walking through the historic streets of Mito in traditional attire at the time, and pointing upwards, pointing at the heavens, I guess. Pointing in the air at the same time. Participants lined up and pointed to the sky in unison for 30 seconds. Naoka Sawa, a fifth grader, said, "It was fun to get together and do the same pose. I'm happy to be able to boast to my friends about holding a world record, being part of a world record achievement." Okay. not the most exciting one in the world, but it's a record nonetheless. So you can't argue with that. It is an accomplishment. They can't take that away from you. No matter what you do in life, they can't take that away from you until somebody gathers together 508 people to point up in the air at the same time. I think we should try that. I think we could beat that. If that's all it takes, pointing in the air for 30 seconds, I think we could beat that. Anyway. This from Great Britain, a world conquer champion is being accused of using a steel chestnut to compete in a recent competition. Now, I guess we should step back here and explain conking, spelled C-O-N-K. Conking is a British sport, and British sports are all weird, but it's a British sport where competitors use chestnuts on leather strings to attempt to break their opponent's chestnuts open. Now, I don't know exactly how this works, but that was the way it was described in the story here. This is the big controversy here. This year's men's champion, David Jenkins, otherwise known as King Conker, has been accused of unfairly using a steel chestnut, which you can imagine would put him at a competitive advantage. Allegations of foul play have been received that somehow King Conker swapped his real Conker for the metal one that was later found in his pocket, according to a competition spokesperson, John Burkett. There are also suggestions that King Conker had marked the strings of the harder nuts. Mr. Jenkins says he did not cheat. He did admit that he does possess a steel chestnut, but he says it is just a novelty item, and he fully denies the allegations. Stay tuned for further updates on the Great World Conquer Championship controversy. I guess we shouldn't laugh too hard. I mean, it was Ohio where we had the guys at Lake Erie that were putting, you know, weights in their fish that they caught a few years back. So people will do anything to win a competition. That's also from the UK. James Howells is suing the City Council of Newport for preventing him from digging up his Bitcoin. Now, here is the story. Mr. Howells, who had a hard drive on an old computer containing 8,000 Bitcoin, but the hard drive was accidentally thrown away. 8,000 Bitcoin, that could be worth up to $500 million, half a billion dollars in Bitcoin he had stored on the digital currency he had stored on this hard drive that was accidentally thrown away. So now he has been seeking permission to excavate 100,000 tons of garbage in search of the missing cryptocurrency. However, the city council has rejected his request due to environmental concerns. I mean, I'm all for protecting the environment, but if I had a half a billion dollars that was buried someplace, I'd be looking to dig it up too. I mean, I would pledge to donate a fair amount to environmental causes. You know what I mean? That's what I think he should probably do. Mr. Howells is now seeking $647 million in his lawsuit against the city council. So I can't dig up my Bitcoin. I'm going to sue you for even more money. So stay tuned. I can understand why he would be a little dismayed at losing his hard drive with all that Bitcoin on it. Yeah. And finally, in the broken news this morning, and this also a story out of the UK, merry old England, better watch who you call Baldy the next time you are overseas. A British high court has ruled that the word bald used against a man can be considered sexual harassment. Yes, the ruling follows a lengthy legal case brought by an electrician by the name of Tony Finn, who claimed his boss harassed him using the insult during a heated argument, called him Baldy, and that he construed as harassment, and a three-person panel ruled that the remark crossed a line and dismissed the boss's argument that the comment was not sexist because women can be bald too. The panel added that there was a connection between the word bald and the protected characteristic of gender, noting that it is much more prevalent in men than it is in women. And that's the bald truth right there. That's the, or the follically challenged truth, I guess we should say. Wow. It doesn't say how much he was awarded or, you know, what any of the judgment was. But, yeah, don't call anyone baldy, at least not in merry old England. They're not so merry about that. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Parents, now's the time to give your kids a lesson in school bus and pedestrian safety. Teach your children these tips to keep them safe. When getting off a bus, look both ways before crossing. Before crossing the street, take 5 giant steps out from the front of the bus, make eye contact with the driver, and wait for the driver to signal it's safe to cross. And tell kids to stand back from the road when waiting for the bus. This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A new survey of 5,000 American parents. They asked parents, do you give your child financial advice? Many of us do. Most of us do. The average respondent, the average parent in the survey, gave their child 114 pieces of financial advice per year. So, what does that work out? More than twice a week, we are giving our kids financial advice. However, their child only listens, according to the survey, about 54% of the time. 36% of parents are very confident in the advice that they give. And 72% say they want to further their own financial knowledge so that they can help their kids. Which I thought was kind of interesting, that nearly three quarters of parents are looking to expand their own financial knowledge and understanding, not so much for their own benefit, but for the benefit of their kids so they can pass that along. Ankita DeMello of Wise, the financial online financial platform Wise, which commissioned the survey, said parents have to manage countless complex conversations as they prepare a child for adulthood. And finances are certainly at or near the top of the list. The survey goes on to examine the types of financial advice that we give our kids. 55% of parents are confident in helping their child with budgeting. 52% are confident in managing savings options, different types of savings and investment vehicles. And 41% are confident in navigating credit cards, the smart use of credit. But the biggest weakness we have, and I would have to say that this probably, I would fall into this category too, only 4% say they feel knowledgeable when it comes to international finance. Now that's kind of advanced finance. I don't know how many parents feel the need to make sure that their kids understand international finance. That's kind of a deep subject. But if there was any area that we did not really feel very comfortable in sharing advice with our kids, that would be the area. But I would say that if you can help your kid with budgeting, managing their savings options, and the smart use of credit, I would say that's a pretty solid foundation to give your kids. Well, as you may already know, the Medicare annual enrollment period opened this week. This is not the first time we have talked about this, and I'm sure it won't be the last over the course of the next month and a half. We're getting several perspectives on this, and joining us this morning is Dr. Ali Khan, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Aetna Medicare. Dr. Khan, what should beneficiaries be thinking about right now before they lock in these decisions for the coming year?
I think of three questions that should be guiding everybody's decision-making. Number one, what is the plan that I can afford? What's in my budget, right? Number two, where are my favorite doctors, favorite hospitals, favorite pharmacists and pharmacies? And does the plan that I'm looking at cover them or not? And then number three, for the prescription drugs that I take on a regular basis, does the plan cover them and at what cost? And Chris, this is a place actually where that can change from year to year in terms of individual costs for the medication or whether it's covered or not. So I really encourage people to try to get up-to-date information this year. They can come visit us at Medicare.com or other resources to figure out exactly the answers to those questions. And there's a lot of other information out there, but keeping it simple here is really critical.
Yeah, and it is important to take your time and really do your research on this because you really don't get a do-over, at least not until next year. So that can be a long time if you don't make the right choices.
Definitely. And like making sure you're accessing all the resources available to you, whether it's stuff online, whether it's trusted, you know, community brokers who can help guide things, mm-hmm. or whether it's one of our team members to help you decide what's right for you. All those channels are open.
So what advice would you have to help consumers understand the plan options that are out there? Because there are so many of them.
It's a great question. I try to keep this simple as well. Again, because there's so many different variables and everybody's getting so much mail and information thrown at them. So on one side, we have traditional Medicare, which we all know well. Where Medicare Advantage differs from traditional Medicare is really in three key areas. Number one, Chris, is affordability. Every plan will have a maximum out-of-pocket level that is guaranteed in terms of how much is going to come out of your wallet for all your medical costs during that year. That's something traditional Medicare just doesn't offer. The second really revolves around that prescription drug coverage. Prescription drug coverage is baked into Medicare Advantage plans with many drugs, low cost or no cost, to make sure that we're investing in your health. That's just not covered in traditional Medicare. And third, and this is where I get most excited, is the investments that we make from a benefit standpoint in Medicare Advantage around wellness and living your best life. Whether that's dental benefits, hearing and vision benefits, fitness benefits, or many others, these are places where we get to innovate to make sure that you are able to live your life happy, healthy, and out of the hospital. And those are the kinds of benefits that, unfortunately, traditional Medicare just doesn't offer. So I keep it to those three as kind of the big three of how to differentiate between all the things you're hearing.
On that last point, especially, one of the things that maybe gets lost when we talk about Medicare coverage, because when we think about Medicare, a lot of times it's all about, you know, will our medications and our treatments be covered? What we don't talk about as often is that healthy lifestyle component and preventing the need for medical care to begin with, to the extent that we can. What can people do to promote healthy aging?
Well, Chris, I'm so glad you talked about prevention because I think it starts there. And, you know, we obviously, with prevention, we talk a lot about colonoscopies and mammograms and all sorts of things and many sure. doctor's visits. But let's just bring it back to the basics. One of the biggest things we can do to keep your brain healthy and prevent the onset of dementia is getting you an annual hearing test and an annual vision test. Those kinds of eye exams and hearing screenings help us to catch things in real time before they get serious enough where your hearing is affecting how you're interacting with other people. Or your reading, inability to read affects what kind of mental stimulation you're getting on a daily basis. All the kinds of things that over time can contribute to the onset of dementia. So we're really proud at Medicare to cover those at no cost to any of our members because that's how critical they are to make sure they happen every year. Second big thing that I talk to a lot of my patients here in Chicago is around movement. Whether that's you're a power lifter or you're doing Tai Chi or you're in a walk club or you're a marathon runner or you're just, you know, gardening to get some activity. 30 minutes of activity a day does wonders for bone health and bone strength, for preventing falls by improving your balance, and by improving your heart health and your cardiovascular endurance. Those are all things that we need to live long, happy, healthy lives. And the last piece of like getting to that great life is about investing in the community and connecting in. Social isolation and loneliness are real, particularly in folks as they get older. And so if you have an existing community, like a bowling club or a book club or a religious faith-based community, or you're in, you know, you've got a great chat group. How are we helping you connect into those and making sure that you're participating and staying vibrant? And if you don't have those, how are we helping you find options that are available for you in the community and connecting you to those so you can develop that exact kind of social cohesion that keeps people vibrant and healthy and active? Those are things that we're really proud to do and support at Medicare as part of those additional wellness benefits. I just think it's a big differentiator from traditional Medicare.
And again, really, it boils down to thinking, and this is kind of a buzzword, we hear it all the time, but I think it really applies in this case, taking kind of this holistic view of healthcare, that it's about more than just the dollars and cents and the doctors and the pharmacists and all of that. You're really thinking big picture and taking the wide view.
Well, Chris, we have to, right? At Medicare, we take an enormous responsibility that you all, people who choose us for plans, are trusting us with a big part of their healthcare journey. And so making that investment return multiple fold by investing in wellness, taking that holistic view, it's a buzzword for a reason, because we need to do it,
yeah.
Right? And so the more that we can follow through and deliver on that, the better everyone else is.
Again, Dr. Ali Khan is Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Aetna Medicare. As we mentioned, the Medicare annual enrollment period is now open through December 7th. Where do we get more information?
First, come visit us at aetnamedicare.com. That's aetnamedicare.com. For answers to the questions that we talked about here, for the ability to identify what things are most important to you, and to connect to, you know, our teams and teams within the community that enable us to help you pick the plan that's best for you. We'd love to serve you.
Dr. Ali Khan, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, insights on the latest hiring and compensation trends impacting today's workforce from the just-released 2025 Robert Half Salary Guide. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.